Table Talk is not your typical D&D TTRPG podcast. We are not here to run you through our whole campaign.
We're here to talk about everything else in the space of Table Talk roleplay.
I'm your host, Alejandra Wilhelm.
And I'm also your host, Mariah Gresham.
And we're your tabletop roleplay girlies.
Alrighty, and we are live with another episode of Table Talk. Today we have a very special guest, someone I'm very excited to have a little chat with. Give us a little intro into yourself and what you do and where people can find you.
I am Cassie Mothwin, and I am kind of an award-winning tabletop RPG designer. I started out in 5e and then quickly branched out into my own system as well as a few other systems. And I can be found at CassieMothwin.com, or you can just buy my games directly at Mothwin.com. And then I'm pretty loud across the socials. Pretty easy to find me yelling or fixating on something tabletop RPG related somewhere.
Heck yeah. I love the just the low key trying to slide. Like, I'm kind of an award.
Kind of.
You're a multi-award winning.
You're a boss bitch.
You could own that.
I'm trying to be better about it because I was looking back at my blog that I just post random things. And someone asked me recently for advice on playtesting. And I had posted a blog. I was like, oh, I think I wrote something about that. And I had last year in July. I was like, here's how I do playtesting. Here's how I build out a survey. But it had a note at the very top of it that said, hey, just so you know, I'm a fledgling little baby designer. You know, I haven't done much. So, you know, take all of this with a grain of salt. So I reposted that on Threads because I was like, oh, this might be helpful. You know, playtesting doesn't go out of style. Yeah. So I reposted it. And then I also rewrote the note to be like, by the way, I'm an award-winning designer, so...
Good. This is coming from a place of authority.
I think what I have is valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have some credibility.
Yeah.
Because you do.
You do, absolutely. And you should be proud of it. Yeah, we got to see you at the awards for like, at PAX for your
game. Oh, cool.
And mm-hmm. So, like, that's how we found you, and we were like... going immediately into a deep dive. I was like, I need to know who she is. I need to know everything about this game. Yep. And I think literally as soon as I landed back in Houston, I was like, and I'm buying the sticker game.
Yep.
It was, and it's very good. I also like to give stickers to my players as rewards.
Me too.
Like after every session, we have a little
like achievements. I give them stickers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a little mystery grab bag. So like after every session, we get to like root around in there, see what everybody pulls out, and I'm just constantly hunting like on Etsy for just all these like they range everything from like memes to direct call outs for my players,
yeah,
like or like D&D related stickers or just aesthetic or anything like that. So it's kind of a mixed bag of whatever you're gonna get in there. So when I saw the sticker game, I was like, this is perfect, thank you, I will tuck this away.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I found my target market.
Yeah, you 100% did. It was very successful. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, like, I guess generally the process of making a game from, or like your journey into entering that space and like what that's like.
Sure. So I've always been a creative person. So I feel like it's important that I don't just say, oh, I ran D&D and I really liked it. So I just, you know, started doing my own thing. I've always been extremely creative. I've always been a writer in some aspects. I'm a writer in my day job. So transitioning that into design from a tabletop RPG perspective isn't as big a leap as saying someone who hasn't done any writing in the past. So I've always been someone who loves playing pretend, who loves to write stories, and I love making shit up with my friends. So when I discovered there was a way to mechanize that, and it's called tabletop RPGs, I was like, oh, what is perfect. This new mm-hmm. thing that I will be consuming unhealthily for the next while? So I did encounter tabletop RPGs through D&D and started running my own campaign. I'm still running that campaign, and we're now over three years later in both of them. And nice. That was when I started to first experiment with homebrew, looking at my own subsystems, and then eventually writing content for 5e and then moving out and sort of exploring what else was out there. I said, okay, I've done this, but what else can I do? There's a lot of systems. There's a lot of space to experiment. And I'm just naturally curious. So I immediately started seeking out other systems, and I couldn't turn my brain off when it said, you could do this in this system, or you could borrow these mechanics from this system, and this system, and make a whole new game. And so my process is mostly just reading a ton of content, either in books. I mean, even self-help books have really interesting pieces in them that you can pull out and use in tabletop RPGs for building NPCs. So it's like, I'm just naturally curious. I'm always reading tabletop RPGs, a variety of literature, news articles. I love listening to podcasts on economics because I find them so helpful for world building.
True.
I'm not saying your world should be that specific, but you can learn about especially behavioral economics, about how people behave. And even integrating that into game design can be a really interesting way of looking at play at the table. All of this to say, I don't really have a process. I just synthesize a lot of information. One might call me like an explorer just because I do explore so much. I'm not really hunting for specific things. And then usually a gremlin will bite me on the brain and say, you got to make something right now with this or you're going to perish. And then the thing is made because it keeps biting until it's done.
Yeah, it's like, no, you will satiate this.
Yes.
I love that. Especially like I love the integration, I guess, of that writer brain, DM brain, creative brain, what have you. And especially like that skill transferring from like, yes, when you're a dungeon master, you have to kind of start becoming like a master of a lot of different like sectors of knowledge. Like you're like, I'm going to study up on like all these ancient cultures. I'm also going to be reading science articles. I'm also going to be learning about economics, because once you start getting into that world building mode, I'm like, I need to know how everything functions so I can start sapping the things that I want. And as a writer, you do too.
Should I figure out how currency works and how that will work from nation to nation and who takes care of the roads and why and who's it's a whole Pandora's box, really.
Like, and it's so funny to see, like, whether it's for a campaign or a book or whatever, like what of that research you actually end up using in the book. But like all of it, I think, is always so important to like ground the story and make it feel real, even with just, it's just like how characters are buying something or whatever. Like you can kind of tell when thought hasn't been put into certain things. But it is really funny, because sometimes you will go down and think of like, how does the water system work? And like, well, your character's not a plumber. Like you're not going to fix like, you know, the like, you know, but it still matters. And so it's always interesting to see like what of that you use and then what of it is like a reference or something that lives in your brain.
Yeah. And what of that becomes like your very questionable search history on Google?
Yeah, that ship sailed so long ago for me.
Yeah. Because Mariah's a writer as well. So she's like deep in the sauce on that.
Sorry, NSA. We out here.
Yeah.
I'm on some lists. It's fine.
Same. Very much same.
So I think you just want to type like for a book on the end of the Google search, like that'll fix it. And like, I don't think that's, they'll be like, sure, no, that's not concerning anymore.
That's not going to put you on some like, oh, okay, she said it's for a book, so we're fine. Nobody
needs to fine.
Be concerned about this knowledge.
I think I was Googling like, what does fresh graveyard dirt taste like the other day?
For what purpose?
You know, someone might have to eat it, and I wanted to be able to explain in high detail for some reason.
Somebody might need to lick a grave. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. You know, it's good knowledge to have. I don't remember what I found.
Like it's, you know, weirder things have happened. At graves, we read Wuthering Heights in school, which is the same thing basically. It started that scene. I was like, oh no, I know exactly. This is going one of two ways, and I just don't know how far they're going to commit to the bit. And it was like all the way, and I respect it.
Yeah.
It's also the element of being like a game master, and you're just like, there's both, I can never be too prepared because there can be, there's so many left turns. And I'm like, I'm grateful that I did randomly snatch that bit of trivia in my brain.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's other points where I'm like, I will kill myself with this amount of research.
Yep.
It's the balance of it all.
And like trying to remember what random shit you said in the moment when you were just pulling something out of the void. And then it's like, cool, now I've got to make this fit and make it make sense. That's all. Yeah. I do a lot of that because I am definitely more of a pantser when it comes to just things in the moment. So I'll just rap on some shit off. And then I'm like, ooh, we need to start recording our sessions so I remember what I said.
I'm grateful that we record our sessions because sometimes they will come at me and they're like, so what was that thing that you said that was really, really important? I was like, I definitely was going off the dome because I did not even think y'all were going to go there. Mm-hmm. And like now there's this weird prophecy that y'all have. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I made it up at the moment. I'm glad we have recording.
It was there all along. What are you talking about?
Yeah. No, I specifically wrote that bit out. Yeah.
That's sure. Where I usually go, well, what do you think it means?
That's always a good one. I would use that in arguments a lot, like making people define the words that they use until they just either started crying or walked away from me. Because I was like, at some point, I was like, what does that mean to you? What's your definition of that word? And at some point, they'll just stop. They wouldn't literally start crying, but just like, they're like, I'm done. This has gone to madness now. And I'm like, yes, exactly. That was the point.
That was the point all along. In your like, how much of your experiences, like, I mean, I imagine it's a lot of it, but how much of your experiences gaming, like both in the TTRPG space, the D&D space, have like influenced, I guess, how you're making games nowadays? Like, I'm sure in the beginning it's a lot, but like, how is it, like, do you feel like you've veered so far off and you're doing a bunch of other stuff, or is it still like there's roots to the beginning of it all?
I think there's still roots, and my first product is called What Crooked Roots, so we have to plug that thing. Yeah.
Hey.
That's cool.
And it was my exploration of folk horror because I could not find anything in 5e that I thought did folk horror well, because it was something I wanted to present to my players. And I think horror is something I have always been swimming in from a creative standpoint. I've written so many horror stories, and I've always been the person around the campfire that will tell a horror story. So when it comes to tabletop RPGs and running D&D even, or other games, I'm always looking for ways to plug a ghost or a demon or some strange mystery, cult, secret society, strange writings that you have to decipher. I just think that space is where I find the most joy, and it is colored all of my products. Even the sticker game, I don't market it as a horror, but I think there are like subtle horror elements to it. I mean, to kind of spoiler alert, but you could potentially die in it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a space we ultimately decided not to explore too fully in the sticker game because we felt like if we went too far that direction, it would just be really polarizing. Mm-hmm. And even in Clean Spirit, which is what I consider my wholesome, cozy game, you make a choice if you want the game to be cozy or if you want to lean into this like horrible happening that can happen in the middle of it. And I just love struggle. I love angst. I love when I have to look over my shoulder, especially if it's pretend. I think that's so fun. And I think that it's present in every single one of my games.
That's really interesting. I love, especially as we've like started to explore new systems now, and like we play around right now, we're in the process of like doing, or starting to create like a horror narrative, podcast that'll be like more drama podcast situation. And then eventually, like, I think we both enjoy like collaborating on making like a TTRPG. So like push out there. Don't know what that would be, but like the horror games that we've started to like explore and see, like one of the first ones that we kind of veered out into was like Candela Obscura with Johnny from Talking XP. And I loved the mechanics of that and just exploring different mechanics in general, but I loved how brutal it is and that the stakes are so high. And that you take the bleed and you take your scars. And that was so, I love the way that that influenced and changed. Cause I'm a hoe for like having a character stroke.
Oh, and, yes.
And
for
have
sure.
That they can't be so happy. I was like, this was made long. For me. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. I can't let them be happy. I'm so sorry. Even my favorite babies get the worst.
They the suffer worst the treatment. Most, truly. Yeah.
I got
the ones you're like neutral rough. About, they have a much easier time.
Yeah. I'm like, their parents are still alive, probably mostly because I forgot about it. But my favorite yeah. babies, nothing but trauma.
Yeah.
Completely relatable.
Absolutely. What are some of your favorite mechanics that you've like explored through all this like research?
I think that I've explored my favorite mechanic is in my probably it's not like it doesn't sell well for me. It's my worst seller, but it sells well, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. it sells fine. But it's not my best seller, but it's called Clean Spirit and it's what I called my cozy game. And a lot of it is inspired by the mechanics I discovered in Fiasco and Wander Home. And instead of like saying I attack or I walk up to the door and open it, things like that, your moves, the actual actions you take on your turn are to ask another player questions. And there is a list of questions that you can ask. And when you ask these questions, you gain a token. And then once you gain so many tokens, you can spend those tokens on a goal. And your group has goals, and then you have goals. And the game ends when a certain amount of goals are met, depending on how many players are playing. And eventually, you'll have to struggle to make a choice. Do you want to be selfish and complete your own goals? Or do you want to contribute and help the group complete this group goal? And you use your tokens to pay for that. And I really like it because it's kind of mechanizing role play in a bit. These questions are very specific and like, tell me about this. The stage of the game is cleaning. So you're walking around your dwelling and cleaning it. And you might walk into another player and say, tell me about this object that you're dusting. And now this other player has to go through and basically create an object, create lore for it, and give it space, give it room. And you'll sort of build that relationship, you and this character will, and you get a token for it. And some of the questions also give the other player a token too. So they might get a token for that one. I don't remember exactly, so I haven't looked at that game in a little bit. and then you work together to solve these goals. The issue is after you complete one goal, because you have multiple goals, after you complete one group goal, you run into a problem. And that's where, as a group, you decide, how difficult do you want this problem to be? Do you want it to be pretty simple? Do you want it to be moderate? Do you want it to be hard and sad? Or do you want it to be impossible and potentially like break your group up forever? Like someone might die, someone might leave. And I think that is a really great, it's really fun. It's like a twist in the game. It's meant to be played in one session. And that I kind of borrowed from Fiasco, because in Fiasco, you do encounter this like twist as you're playing. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Fiasco. But it's a pretty light role-playing game. I can talk more about my critiques on it in a little bit. I don't know if I recommend it.
Yeah, okay.
But I do
be interested, yeah.
I do like the twist that it has where something happens in the middle of the game, and then you all have to react to that and proceed.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and that's what I really like.
Okay, and spill the tea on this critique, because now
we're
wondering.
Okay, so Fiasco isn't terrible by any means. I just think it could be created a little bit better. So essentially, I have a card version, which I think is the version that is most easily accessible nowadays. There's another version that's like a PDF. But the card version, it's really nice because you just shuffle out the decks, deal cards, and then it has great setup. So that's the one thing I encountered when I played, was amazing setup. You ask each other questions to build out your characters, to build out the world you're playing in, and you could be like Stepford Wives, you could be at a mall, it has a fantasy setting. So a lot of fun little settings and cards that are around that. But then as you play, there's just not a lot of support. And a lot of people say this is a great one-shot RPG, and it's a great RPG for beginners. I think it's a great RPG for people who are great at improv. So people who don't really need that help, that support, that ongoing support, because the beginning is so strong, so much onboarding support, but nothing to really help a newbie get through.
Yeah.
So if you and your friends are so great at just rattling crap off and your GM can't get a word in, Fiasco will probably be great for you. But if you're someone who need some ingredients or some structure to build off of. I've seen time and time groups struggle with it.
Gotcha. That's interesting. And it's also the interesting element of like the difference between like a TTRPG game as we know it, where it is like with a GM versus games that are more tabletop and like meant to be played as a group and like the rules are your mm-hmm. guide.
Right. So Fiasco, Clean Spirit, and then Wander Home, which I mentioned earlier, those are all GM lists.
Yeah.
Which Wander Home can be played with a GM, but I play GM lists.
Interesting. Okay. And how does that, like, okay, so from the perspective of, like, so you've given a critique on that. So from the perspective of someone that actually is out here, like, making these games, how do you ensure that you provide that support for your players when you're, like, in the inception or creating, like, that game?
Yeah, so I think you have to decide early on who you want to be talking to. So are you telling people, hey, this is an intro game, and it's great for new players, it's great for people who aren't great at improv, you know, that type of thing. And I feel like the marketing for Fiasco was a bit mismatched for me, right? Because I was told, hey, great game for new people, great game for onboarding people into RPGs, great game for one shot. And then as I was getting into it, I was like, I feel like the expectations were mismatched. Mm-hmm. And I think if you match your expectations, you can do whatever the hell you want. Okay, so let me get that out of the way.
Right, yeah,
for sure. I think if it was just a little clear that, hey, this is the party game, this is the party RPG for people who love to just, like, really get after it and they don't need any guidance. I like all of my games to be for someone who has never touched a game before. And the reason for that is I just know a lot of people have heard of RPGs, but they don't really know and understand them conceptually, like how they work or what they mm-hmm. do. And as someone who can struggle with stage fright, I love having a good framework to work in. So even Clean Spirit, it has tons of examples of how to play. And one thing I've run into with a lot of games is it'll be like, here are the rules, but it doesn't even tell you how to start. Yeah. So Clean Spirit comes with a script and it says, hey, not sure how to start, read the script, pick someone in your group, because you don't have a GM, so it's hard to have a GM set the scene. Pick someone in your group to read the script and then start playing. So even giving that, like, here's how to start. And then with Tangled Blessings, which is my magical school horror role-playing game, there's the horror again, that's also GM-less. In that one, it's questions. It's more questions. So it's a one or two player game. And in the two player game, you're just constantly asking each other questions. And you use cards to decide which questions you're asking each other. And you never run out of guidance there of how to answer those questions or what's going on. Or you never have to make stuff up because there is, I mean, you do. Let me back up. You do make stuff up, but you never have to be like, all right, well, what happens next? Because the game will tell you.
Or you don't have to make up the question. So just almost like really hard. Like you can react to something and like, yes, and your way through it. But having to be like, what do I ask to the storefront? I'm like, I don't know.
Right. So like one of them that is in the top of my head for some reason is like, you're exploring maybe a hidden wing in the school and you find a key in your pocket and you can't figure out which door it goes to. And suddenly you're walking and you find that the key is like humming and you pull it out of your pocket and you put it in this door and you open the door and a bunch of moths fly out and you find some strange, mysterious, you know, cryptic stuff in this room. And then the questions are like, what did you find? What have you released? What was hidden? What was meant to stay in here that has come out? You know, something like that. So they're leading questions as well and they're open-ended. So you get to build on the world while having quite a bit of structure and guidance.
I love that. It feels very similar to, I did this with a friend of mine and it was like one of my favorite times, like playing one of these games that was like that kind of open-ended RP. And it's a two-player game. I don't know if you've heard of it, Tether.
Yes, I haven't had a chance to play it, but it's on my list.
It's phenomenal. Like, especially if you have like good, like a good role play partner, because like I did it with my friend Oak and we just like on a whim started it and it was because obviously like and every time you play it's going to be different because obviously you and the person decide how you build the world, who your characters are, what time are you set in and things like that. And I think we created, I had just gotten off of watching like Midnight Mass. So like that influenced a lot of our setting. And we did like a seaside town. They're very cloistered, very wary of outsiders. And I had a girl, my character was in the past. His character was in the present. And my character was a woman who grew up there, but she left to the mainland to go pursue something else. But then her mother died and she came back and became the new like school teacher. And after like taking care of her mother's like funeral things, she just couldn't find it in herself to leave because it's like her connection to her mom. And then the kid is like the son of one of her students. And he's in the future, I'm in the past, and we're communicating via journals. Mm-hmm. And I loved that element that like you draw cards and each card is a different prompt for your journal entry. And it really gives you a lot of like runway to kind of figure out what happened in that night. Like somebody died. How did they die? Like what were the things? And like the way that story developed and the horror changed from us like not knowing what it even was and started to take shape because of both of our entries. Like that was so cool to me.
Yes. And your experience has reminded me of another game that isn't advertised as a two-player game. I think it's 2 to 6 or something like that. I played with just one other person. And it was amazing. It was called Contact by Jay Stroutman. And this is a game. I was just not expecting how amazing it would be. You build a playlist with this game. So I think it uses tarot cards too. But basically, aliens have contacted you, and the only way to communicate with the aliens is to use music. So you and your players go through and you pick out songs, and the game guides you through like how to pick out songs. So you're like, pick out a song that you hate, pick out a song that like makes you sad, pick out a song that no one would expect you to listen to, things like that. And then as you play the game, you'll draw cards, you'll get questions, and then you have to pick a song from this list that you put together to answer those questions. And then you get this incredible soundtrack to this story that you've told. And I want people to understand this experience that I had with the person I played with because it was so amazing. But no one else will ever understand if I'm like, listen to this playlist. They're not going to understand the significance of this Blink-182 song and why it makes me cry.
That sounds amazing because I am a hoe for a good Spotify playlist, especially for like our D&D sessions, our characters. Like I have
Oh yes, me too. I have so many.
Yeah.
Like so that, many playlists.
That Spotify premium like membership pays for itself at this point.
10 times over. Yeah.
Yeah. And like there like our Strixhaven campaign, like I have playlists and I'm like, there are songs that are very specific to very specific scenes. I'm maladaptive in a dream, like a mother.
Yeah.
And so most of my D&D planning is me sitting in my car on my commute, listening to songs that I'm like picturing very specific storylines and scenes to. And then I'll play them in session and describe them in session because that's been all of the work that I've done. Yeah. And so like they'll watch me rot with a song that I'm like, I have been listening to this song from the moment I got to work.
Yeah.
To the moment I got home on repeat, like a psychopath.
For 18 hours.
You and me, we are the same.
Yep.
I'm like, but this song will not get played in session till like a year from now. And I'm dying.
The most recent one was like the instrumental of Tango de Roxanne, which slaps so hard.
Yeah.
But also like, I feel like it being an instrumental makes it a slightly less crazy. Because essentially, you'd be like, oh, it's background music. If it has words,
then you're like, crazy. I've been
listening to the same words for 18 hours. Like, you can't hide from that one. You just have to own that.
I've done both. So, like, shamelessly, I'm a psychopath. But I do like that. And I've done that with music. And, like, one of our past guests, Aiden Chan, who does a lot of Dungeon Maestro, he does a lot of really, really good like instrumentals and like accompaniments to other like actual plays and a lot of other stuff. But he and I mentioned where he'll have like a theme for a character and you'll just get that same theme in a different version so that you can play it as like a subtle undertone to certain scenes that are related to that character to give like the players the Pavlov. So like now, whenever I find a song that I like for a specific character or a specific thing that's going on, I will find multiple versions of the same song that are like, yeah, one's more intense, one's like way like diluted, that I could play like just underneath it all. And I have just so many versions of like Tango de Roxanne in my playlist.
Yeah,
like
we're gonna mine subliminally was
a Michael condition. Bublé song. Ooh, I can't remember solid. Which one it was. Oh, but I had the instrumental. I had the Michael Bublé version, which was a cover of the original. So, and then I had like the slowed down version, and I was playing all of them. And I run Ravenloft. So Strahd, it was his like theme song.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
In our Ravenloft campaign, Strahd's theme would make us break out in a sweat, because you just be in a house, and then that starts playing, and it's like, oh, we're about to get Millie rocked in this random suburban neighborhood.
It doesn't help that our DM like would be watching us have like our RP amongst ourselves, and he'd start playing it, but like at no volume, and then just like by one notch.
Yeah,
every few seconds. Until somebody that was sitting close to him listened and was like, wait.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh Lord, he coming.
It's so good. But yeah, no, I would love. What was the game again? Because I'm going to have to write that down.
Contact by Jay Stroutman. So it's J, just the letter.
Okay.
And then Stroutman, Stroutman.
Beautiful. Okay. Because I already know that's going to be great.
It's good.
I get that feeling that you have. I get that feeling in general with like my RPs or like our D&D sessions. It's like, anyone that isn't at this table right now will not understand the level of emotions that we just went through at all.
Like, and there's no way you can't write it out. Like, and it's been years in the making. Even though our contact game was only like, we played it in a car. It was a great car ride game. I felt like it was one of the most cinematic experiences I've ever had, and I'll never be able to share that with anyone else.
I know. I feel bad. It's like Spotify and tarot cards, if it's like we're sold immediately. Yeah. We need no further context is
good.
Needed.
Yes, are in check it out. It's
the
so
target
good.
Market. Just nailed
it. Also
that.
Reminds me of like, have you seen LA by Night at all, like the VTM stream?
No. I've heard it's good though.
Okay. It's very good. LA by Night and New York by Night are very good. But anyway, there's a part in that where like Annabelle, you know, like one of the newest kindred, like she has a mortal girlfriend, and they communicate through like a shared Spotify playlist they have where they add songs to like check in on each other or say how they're doing or like whatever. And like it's a really cool use of that as like a secret coded message kind of.
Yeah, so like fun. The titles of the songs are how they're like saying messages to each other in that playlist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Hurts my heart, but I love it.
Yeah, it gets rough. It starts cute and then it gets rough, as most things do, but it is very good.
God, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, on that same thought train, outside of contact, have you had any other like really impactful, like either TTRPGs or like actual tabletop games that have had that same level of like,
where do I even start?
Yeah. Wherever. Yeah. Wherever.
Yes.
Yeah, I've had a lot. I can plug all day. The game that Tangled Blessings is based off of is called Anamnesis, and Contact is also based on Anamnesis, and it's a tarot card game. It is a great game for building either NPCs or characters for upcoming campaigns, and it's also a great standalone game. But I think Sam, the creator of Anamnesis, Sam Lee, doesn't talk enough about like how it's a great thought starter for your character for any other campaigns, because you start the game with your character has amnesia, so you don't know anything about the character, and then you draw tarot cards, which go through five different stages, and you learn something new about this character, about like their regrets, the world they live in, the people they knew, the problems they've encountered as you play the game. So it's a really great way to get really connected with a character and build out a backstory. It doesn't even have to be long. It's, but it's very inspiring and for me, emotional. I get really connected to my characters. And there's just so much potential there, and I don't want to give away the ending, but it's a great tarot game. And like I said, Contact by Jay Stratman was based on it, and then Tangled Blessings by me was based on it. So, and it spawned a few other games. So it's a great system, so easy. I ordered it because I told you I'm so curious. So I saw that it was a tarot game, and I like tarot cards. I think they're very pretty, but I'm not a very spiritual person. So I wanted a reason to buy tarot cards. So I bought it because I was like, okay, now I can buy a pretty deck of tarot cards. And I opened it just to sort of see what it was. And then I started playing it without meaning to. Like, I meant to just like read it and like see what it was and why it was so good. And then I played it and I was like, oh my God, okay. My perception has changed completely. And then another game that I really loved was called The Sealed Library. Oh, Anamnesis is a solo game. The Sealed Library is also a solo game, and it uses a deck of cards and a Jenga tower and a D6. And as you play, it uses the, just backing up a little bit, it uses the Wretched and Alone system, which is also what one of my games, Carved by the Garden, is based on as well. And as you play, you're trying to save books in this library that's being attacked. And each time the library is attacked or there's like an earthquake or something to that extent, you pull a block from the tower. And as you play the game, the tower gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And there's no way you can save all these books. There's no way you can keep the memories of the civilization and the people alive because you're the last librarian. And people are getting in and you're getting injured. You're getting sick. You're running out of food. You're running out of supplies. And you're just like, as you encounter that and deal with that, it's a very stressful 2 hours to watch as your building slowly crumbles, right? And it either falls or something even more terrible happens. Great game. I also did a stream of The Wretched, which I don't know if you all know this, won a few awards. And that is a game that uses the same system. It's what spawned The Wretched and Alone system. And in that one, you are the last surviving, like, basically astronaut of a spaceship, and you're being tracked by a monster, off-brand alien, basically. Great game. And then also Dead Belt. I haven't had a great emotional experience with that. Let me back up a little bit. That's not the correct wording. Dead Belt is a great beer and pretzel game. I don't think I've been very connected emotionally with my character, which is great because there's a high likelihood your character will die. But it's a great beer and pretzels game if you're like, I just want to explore a friggin' dungeon in the sky, because you're exploring derelict spaceships, and just like chill and do some light role play. I don't feel like being sad, which is rare for me. But but it's a really fun game to get to the table, and I play it co-op with my husband, and it's a great blend of RPG and board game.
Heck yeah. I remember, like, I started playing, this was a fixation I had with, have you ever played Detective?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I found it just on a whim one day with, like, some friends, because we went to a board game cafe, and so you just get food, you get coffee and whatever, and then you can just grab whatever game, and it's a game meant to be played with, like, 4 players, and you go case by case. But then as you, in each case is a session, because they take forever. There's like decks of cards, and there's like different clues, and you have to spend resources to like, okay, what are we going to prioritize? What are we going to like look into? And then you have to make choices on what leads you follow. And sometimes you end up in dead ends. Sometimes you discover big things. And I bought it because it was so good, and I wanted to play the other cases, but I bought it to just have at home, and I played it with my mom and my dad. And at one time, I think our friend Max like sat in for one of the cases, but when we started playing it, we started realizing that like the cases are interconnected, even though it doesn't seem that way. And they're like, the first one is like a cold case from forever ago. And then it all is connected to like a present day thing. And I felt like a crazy woman. I was like on full conspiracy board.
Yeah. I love that.
And it was insane. And I love that you give different roles to different people. So like for me, I was the person in charge of keeping track of all the information we discovered and like taking good notes and all of that stuff. And then they were like, you know, figuring out where we were going and all that stuff. But because I was the note taker, I was like, I'm connecting everything, and I'm going mad at the table, just, like, in front of everyone.
Give me the red string.
Yeah. And so there'd be moments. And like, I love my dad. I love my father. He's a brilliant man. Not the brightest crayon on the box sometimes. So I'd have to sit there. And I'm like, no. So you remember the thing from this case? And he's like, what? That was like, we played that 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, no, but you need to understand.
Like, I need you to get on the ball. Lives are at stake.
Yes. But I love the effect that those games can have on you, where you're like, no, this is like, this is taking over my entire existence in this moment.
Oh, yes. 100%. That is my jam.
Yeah. And then I think another one that I had, well, we had one game where we got it at PAX, actually. It was the Session Zero, like Mariah got it.
The Session Zero, like, system where
I should have picked it up.
It's really good.
Because I thought I was just going to be able to buy it later. And I was like, oh, no,
yeah, she's you too.
Fresh off of Kickstarter. There is not one available to buy. But thankfully, like, Mariah did get it. And it reminded me a lot of, like, the game that you were mentioning with the cards and, like, the character creation aspect of that. And so when we realized, like, the full detail of what it was, and the guy told us what it was, because we're designing an actual play for, like, in the next year or two, I was like, oh, it'd be cool to have them, like, pick cards for what their potential characters are going to be for that, like, way ahead of time, and see, like, what that becomes, like, 2 years from now, basically. And we ended up doing that while I was at Mariah's. And it's, I love having a tool, especially for character creation, because I used to, especially when I was first getting into TTRPGs, like, figuring out my character, like, yeah, I'll pick a class and I'll pick a race and I'll pick all this stuff. But then, like, the backstory stuff wasn't super, like, I'm good at it now. But it, like, in the beginning, I just couldn't get, like, my head around it. And so I'm like, how am I going to make this make sense? So I used to use, like, the ideals, the flaws, and
the bonds, I think.
Bonds. So, like, I'd look through those for, like, the selection I made of the class and race and whatever. And I kind of piece together something, but having something to prompt you, like, would be the thing that would start stirring me into a spiral. And I'm like, once I had a little runway, I was good. But I needed something to get me there. And that game I love because, one, the art is beautiful. Like,
absolutely. It's gorgeous. Yeah.
Those cards. But I love that it breaks it down between, like, your, I think it's like your character origin, like a catalyst of an event.
And like a legacy, a tie. Which is like your tie to the past.
Yeah. And it does it really, really well. And, like, you can kind of do whatever you want with it, really, because you can follow the book and do that. But then I also used it for world building. So, like, I drew cards for the actual world itself and, like, some of the plot stuff. And then I just let them do whatever for their own characters.
Roll a dice, really cool. Or you can just kind of pick on vibes or, like, the colors that go together, or, like, you can do so we did, like, a combination of all of those, and it worked out really cool.
That is really cool. I am not very good at backstories. I've never been very good at them, and I just decided one day I'm not gonna do them anymore. I'm gonna discover my character as I play, and honestly encourage you to try it. It is so much fun. Someone will ask, like, so where are you from? And I'll just, like, look at the map and I'll be like, oh, I'm from here. And then just start, like, riffing. And obviously you got to take notes, right? Because you'll forget.
Yeah.
Unless you want to also work schizophrenia or lying into your backstory, that could also.
Or play a changeling.
It's a really fun way to uncover a character and especially if you are in a dungeon and there's, like, some random set dressing, and you can ask if you have a very collaborative GM, which I play with collaborative people, and you can say, you know what? I think my character might know what this is. I think it would be cool if my character knew what this is. I don't have anything in my backstory, but do you think we could, like, maybe tie it into this other thing that we created a few sessions back? And, you know, with some conversation, you can create those moments where I've found if you have a really tight backstory that's written, like, I know I have one player who has, like, 18 pages of backstory. There's no real wiggle room.
Nice. There,
right? It's pretty. The timeline is the timeline. Yeah.
Yep. Birth to present day.
Yep. That's exactly what it was. So when so it was really hard to while that can be useful, I just think having that collaborative live at the table building can be really fun too.
Oh yeah. One of my favorite characters I've ever played, like Reyna, was completely off the cuff. Because when I started her, I was, again, still like brand baby spanking new to TTRPGs. And I was playing her like in an RP server. And because I didn't know much about what I was doing, I was just like, I didn't make a backstory for her. I don't know much of anything. And then through other people prompting me, like obviously being like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, I made her very dodgy. And then at that point I was like, well, why is she dodgy? Like, why does she not want to tell people?
Exactly.
And those moments in character will start to like stir things up. And one of my favorite things with characters like that. Yeah. And one of my favorite things too is that like when you're kind of making those decisions off the cuff in the moment in the game, I love the moments that you look back on and you're like, yeah, that was a shot called in the moment, had no idea where that was going to lead, and starting to see like the bigger meaning or the way that those things kind of tied themselves perfectly together and like make really impactful effects on your character.
It's not as emotional as we've been talking, but I recently played Necronautilus by World Champ Game Co., which is an incredible game that I can't believe I forgot to mention when you asked about mechanics. But basically, at the beginning of the game, you pick a bunch of words. It's a one-shot game, too. And those, you use those words as your power. So like one of my words was TikTok, and I used it to slow down time at one point, and then I also used it to spread misinformation. So it's a really cool, really cool game. And you also world build as you're playing the game. You like build a planet and then you and your party go and explore the planet. And one thing we had decided was that this planet, for some reason, through random rolls, was against marriage. No marriage was allowed on this planet. And when we landed on the planet, we were just chatting as in character. And I said something along the lines of, well, you know, the natives aren't going to like us because we're all married. And I meant it as, we all have spouses, but all the other players took it as, oh, we're a polycule. Of course. Yeah, of course we're a polycule. And it was,
we are all married to each other. Yeah.
It was so great. And it was a comedic session for sure, but it really rounded out the whole session. It just made it so much more funny. Like, I just love moments like that where then you can build on them as, you know, the yes and, so to speak. It's just so great.
Oh yeah, like both in the funny haha and like the dramatics of it all are so, so good. Like I think even one of my favorite moments that like I've been starting to get into like Critical Role a lot more recently, because it is the one piece of TTRPGs and it's been very intimidating, but I know there's like a specific moment similar to that where I think it's one of the characters, it's the one that's like a little goblin with like all the bandages.
Oh, I think that one's named Not. I'm not a big Critical Role person.
Yeah. But I know that there's a moment where kind of similar, like they didn't have too much backstory stuff in the moment. And then I think they just made a decision at one point where like they said, oh yeah, like Not's afraid of water or something.
Oh.
But it was very much like, and they talk about it where it's like, yeah, no, I was fully like, yes, standing in the moment, all that. And then like later on, that becomes such a significant like thing because of like their trauma and other stuff and like things that they end up having to go through. And I'm like, those are the good things. So like, I 100% agree with you on that aspect of like, if you are a person that like one struggles with making a backstory going into it, like just discover it in the moment. And if you are someone that does do like hardcore 40 page backstories every time you start a character, like, try it for a character, like even for a small campaign, because it's so cool to like discover your character.
It is. And circling back a little bit to What Crooked Roots, I want to talk about the first encounter I wrote for it because it all relates. It was for Curse of Strahd. My players were coming back from the Vistani camp that's outside of Valaki, and they were traveling through the woods. And I made Barovia a lot bigger than it is raw just because I wanted it to be scarier. And to make it back to Valaki, they needed a guide. So one of the Vistani said, oh, you can take so-and-so. He knows the way. And so this person led them through the woods. And I rolled on the random encounter table in Curse of Strahd while they were walking, and it landed on a grave. And I was like, I don't know who the heck's buried in the middle of the woods. So I was like, all right, well, yeah, so your guide looks over, and you notice that he's looking sadly at a gravestone. that seems kind of hidden in the woods. There's not a name on it. And one of the players was, of course, of like, immediately, may I ask who's buried there? I was like, I don't know. So I just said, in character, I was like, I'd rather you not ask. And they just kept walking. And this person's name was Molly Lightfoot. And that was because in my head, they were just great at like hiding and tracking and kind of like that ranger stereotype, right? So when the players arrived back at Vallaki, I just had him disappear because that was in character for him. And they all stopped and they went, that was his grave. He was a ghost. He's a ghost. And that's the first encounter in What Crooked Roots, is that a ghost can guide your players around and you encounter their grave. That's a whole thing. Molly became a reoccurring character. Also, in a side shot, we found out how Molly died and why his boyfriend, who was another Vistani that had said, you should take Molly with you, how he keeps him alive, kind of spiritually, why it seems like he's alive. So it was like, I never expected this random encounter table to like deliver on such a moment. But it's now,
always,
like,
it always
we've
like that, though.
Cried now. We've cried over Molly Lightfoot. Like, so
I love that. Do a lot of your like in-game moments inspire a lot of your games then?
I don't think so. I think that was like a very particular. I just thought it was so good, and I started working on What Crooked Roots as a fun thing for my players. It was never meant to be a like, hey, public,
like an homage,
take this to it. Yeah. And then as I tweeted about it and people were like, oh, actually, no, we want to see that when you're done. And then I was like, oh, well, I need enough content to make it worth it. And I was like, you know, this was a really good encounter for my players. I'll put it in there.
That's good.
But I think that was pretty much a pretty rare occurrence. The rest were developed specifically like in the for the product.
Heck yeah. Awesome. That's awesome. Well, we are coming up on our time here, but this has been awesome.
Yeah, this has been really fun.
Thank you so much for coming on. Give us like one last little plug and who you are and where people can find you, as well as any exciting projects that are on the horizon that you want to throw out there.
That's a great idea. Hello, I'm Cassie Mothwin. I'm an award-winning tabletop RPG designer.
Correct.
I've designed works for your party. I've also designed works for you to play alone when your party can't get their schedule figured out. So definitely check them out at www.cassiemothwin.com or mothwin.com if you just want to go straight to my store. On the horizon, I've mentioned a few times on this podcast the Tangled Blessings book that I wrote, which is a GM-less two-player or one-player magic school horror role-playing game. This fall, I'm planning on launching either a Kickstarter or a backer kit, some kind of crowdfunding campaign to bring all the expansions for that to print. So very excited to add an additional volume to that game and make spooky school, dark academia even more spooky. So be on the lookout for that.
Hell yeah. I'm probably going to cop that shit because I'm probably going to steal a lot of ideas from Strixhaven because our Strixhaven game gets a little dark sometimes. Again. Strixhaven by the skin of its teeth. But thank you so much for coming
Thanks
on.
For having
it's been
me.
A pleasure having you. Yeah. And thank y'all for listening, and we'll see y'all next time.
Bye. Bye.
Table Talk is a podcast brought to you by Mythos Media Productions, bringing you a new episode every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at TableTalkRPG, or check us out at our website, mythosmediaproductions.godaddysites.com. All business inquiries can reach out to us via email at info@mythosmediaproductions.com.